Shalom Yehudim, Shalom Lebanei Noach, Shalom Goyim. It's the evening of the second day, Kaf Aleph, B'Sivan, Parashas Korach, Tafshinayim Vav, the evening of the first day, Sunday, 26 June 2016, webcasting from the hills of Yehuda, fourth son of Jacob Israel, whose seed lived here thousands of years before there was a London or a Paris or a Brussels. So this Jew in Judea, yours truly, awoke on Friday to the early news that the Brits had voted to leave the EU. Made my day. And as Evelyn Gordon on the Commentary Magazine's website wrote, there is significance in the coincidence between that rejection of the EU last Thursday in the UK balloting, as simultaneously in the EU Parliament, the parliament played host to Mahmoud Abbas, a Holocaust denier as starkers as David Irving, a Jew hater right out of the Middle Ages, alleging Jews were poisoning wells and engaging in massacres, the likes of which the world had never seen. Voting to leave the EU means, among other things, no longer being a party to the chronic anti-Jewitis that the Continentals can't seem to shake. Voting to leave the EU was overwhelmingly less a UK vote than an English one. Scotland and Northern Ireland now want out of the UK. They all voted to remain. England that wants out in order to preserve England, whose language and culture is so different from that of the Islam that has taken up residence in that country big time and aspires to swallow up England and turn it into a Muslim country. If the vote had gone the other way, The English would have been voting to allow some of the millions of Muslims who have invaded Germany in the last year to take up residence in England. And as per EU statute, the English would have to provide for them with welfare support and education, medical care, as long as they might need it. The EU in practice, if not theory, had become a government powerful enough to control people's lives, with the people in question having no control over these unelected bureaucrats. The EU for the English had become an alien dictator, imposing on them an alien culture. The English have also done it to themselves, by the way, in respecting Sharia legislation. But now one hopes the English have put their collective patriotic foot down and will tell Islam this far and no further. Indeed, the time has come to roll back what gains in England allowed the Muslims to have in imposing Sharia in certain aspects of their lives. There is an abyss between Judeo-Christian culture in the West and Islam, starting with Islam's fostering of polygamy, which a social norm generates a raft of social pathologies. Islam produces men like Mahmoud Abbas, who was applauded in the EU, and during his speech, in which he accused rabbis of ordering the poisoning of wells and massacres committed by settlers and soldiers against poor Palestinians. Then again, this is Europe, and the English must always not identify with Europe, one of whose deficits is its chronic bouts of anti-Jew obsession. Take that gathering in Paris at the beginning of the month, entitled by its French organizers Initiative pour la paix au Proche-Orient, the Initiative for Peace in the Near East. Macaulay Schoen ran a picture of this group, these attendees, 24 men, 4 women, representing 28 countries, summoned by the French to discuss an international peace conference in order to settle the Israeli-Palestinian conflict by the end of the year. It was a picture of the usual, a standard 3 lines of people. The first 10 stood on the floor, and there were 2 more lines on risers in back of them, as if they were all in a choir. There in the front row was John Kerry, standing next to Federica Mogherini of the EU. In the middle was François Hollande, next to him Ban Ki-moon. You look at this picture and can imagine what a workday is for these people, chatting with one another, staying in 5-star hotels and eating at the best restaurants in Paris, and all because 28 of these nations sent their foreign ministers to agree that the Israeli-Palestinian conflict must be solved, and the two-state solution is the way to go. And as irritatingly reprehensible of these Gentiles to gather like this, in agreement that a 500,000 Jews must be driven from their homes, one can be grateful for the progress and evolution in world history when it comes to us Jews and these Europeans. I mean, in centuries past, there would be courts of Catholic priests and bishops and cardinals in their red robes condemning Jews to be tortured, burnt at the stake, and have all their worldly possessions confiscated, sometimes leaving behind a homeless widow and children. Today, though, they gather to think about, to dream about, but not actually carry out, the expulsion of 500,000 Jews from homes they have every right to live in. That is the meaning of the two-state solution, according to the Arabs. I myself remember watching Hanan Ashrawi in 1993, commenting on the signing on the White House lawn of the alleged peace treaty, who said there will be no peace so long as even one Israeli and one Israeli settlement remains in the occupied territories, in her description. And here were these foreign ministers from 28 countries gathered to pursue a course of action for the world's only Jewish state, when these same countries never gather like this to pressure other countries to do this or do that. These same 28 never gathered in Paris to, say, help the end the Russia-Crimea conflict and the Russia-Ukrainian conflict. No conference is ever held to dictate to the Chinese to get out of Tibet. Why is this so? In commentary about the visits to the EU Parliament by Abbas and Israeli President Rivlin last week, the Europeans are reported to be mostly concerned about the continuation of construction of the settlements, which is legal, by the way, according to the Oslo text, and the Knesset law clamping down on the NGOs inside of Israel, manned by anti-Jew Israelis and funded by anti-Jews outside the country. The Europeans say this is an offense against democracy, this law, this attempt to monitor and control Israeli NGOs, which is a nonsensical accusation. The law is the exercise of democracy, the power of the demos, the people, to defend themselves from anti-Jew Jews within and anti-Jew goyim overseas, governments and NGOs who funnel money into this country to these traitors. In other words, these Europeans remain addicted to their hostility to Jews. Thank God it is not acted out as it was during the Inquisition, but it still is there in such civilized venues as this conference in Paris was, of these Gentile diplomats socializing and complaining about the Jews, the greedy Jews who won't hand over land they stole from the Palestinians. 1,000 years in the past, Jews were accused of murdering Gentiles to suck out their blood. Today, they persecute the poor victims of their racist, fascist, nationalist revival. Indeed, at the podium in the de facto parliament of the continent of Europe, the assembly was addressed by a Muslim terrorist and Holocaust denier who called Israel a fascist country and cited for support Bogi Yaalon and Ehud Barak and Yair Golan. So it is fitting that on the very day England voted to pull out of Europe, one good reason was the behavior of the Europeans in constantly siding with the Muslim barbarians who slaughter us all the time. In 1980, in Venice, Italy, the EC, the precursor of the EU, recognized the PLO. They paid their respects to Yasser Arafat and the PLO as legitimate fighters for a legitimate cause, the righting of the injustice done to the ancient Palestinians by the birth of Israel. And here we are, almost a biblical generation of 40 years later, and the Europeans are still at it, kowtowing to the Arabs, to the Muslims, for whom massacring Jews in coffee shops is the epitome of religious devotion. The EU allows this Muslim terrorist Abbas the podium to spew his medieval delusional accusation against Jews. Is that evidence the EU does not deserve to exist? Leastwise, to play host to such satanic thinking. The Jewish demons are likened to vampires who suck out their blood and poison the water supply to kill non-Jews in great numbers. That's what he did, Abbas did. You got that? More, it's more projection. The fear that the Jews want to kill Gentiles in great numbers by poisoning the wells has always been a reflection of their bloodthirsty urge to murder Jews in great numbers, which they did again and again and again in every century. Yeah, one woke up with a smile on Friday at the surprise victory for the survival of England. This is what this vote was all about, the survival of the English people and their amazing culture. How like the Jews the English have been, an island of people, small, off the beaten path, and that goes out and creates the greatest empire the world has ever known. The sun never set on the Union Jack, and it's no arbitrary historical fluke that today the global lingua franca is their language. When, for example, a Japanese airliner approaches an airport in Brazil, tower and pilot talk in English. When a Russian airliner lands in Egypt, power and pilot talk in English. The English united with their language, the Indian subcontinent, their language and their culture created Canada, the United States, Australia, New Zealand. I'm well aware of their traditions of anti-Jewism. I personally have been a victim of it, but I'm also aware of their special positive relationship to the Jewish people, unique in the West, I think. Barbara Tuchman's first book was that subject, I think. It's also an accident of history that the Balfour Declaration came out of England and no other country. England became the custodian of Eretz Yisrael after the Turks were driven out, and they were tasked by the League of Nations with bringing into existence a Jewish homeland. For sure, the British were less than perfect in their administration, thanks in part to their anti-Jewism, but also the constraints upon them. Israel's Zionist history contains a special black mark over the English for the White Paper of 1939 that denied Eretz Yisrael as a haven for Jews desperate to flee Europe. Who knows how many hundreds of thousands who were gassed might have been saved without that white paper. And then even after the war, the Brits denied homeless survivors the right to come here, arresting them, putting them in prison camps. What is missing, though, in the standard Israeli version is the pressure on the English from many sides in those days, starting with the Muslims in their possessions. England ruled over Cairo, Egypt, over the Suez Canal. England ruled in Iraq, where England's greatest investment was the oil fields of British Petroleum. England ruled in India, which was also pressing for independence under Mahatma Gandhi, where a huge Muslim minority also lived. It's also no coincidence that one guiding spirit of the IDF in 1948, the first Jewish army here since before the advent of Christendom, was Captain Ord Charles Wingate, a zealous Christian Zionist whose life story would make a splendid Raiders of the Ark Lost movie type movie. Wingate arrived in Mandatory Palestine in September 1936 as an intelligence officer tasked with suppressing the real First Intifada, when it was called the Arab Revolt. The Israeli army is famous for an officer corps whose slogan is, "After me," meaning an officer does not order his troops into battle from the rear. He doesn't lead from behind. He leads them into battle, and that is the legacy of Ward Wingate. He was a crusader for the return of the Jewish people to the land of Israel, and he was not alone among the English. Foreign Secretary Arthur Balfour himself and Prime Minister David Lloyd George were both, as was Winston Churchill, Christian Zionists in the fullest sense. And it's no accident that no other country in the world has had such a record of support for the Jewish people. When the Pilgrim Fathers, the Puritans from England, came ashore on Massachusetts Bay in 1620, they carried with them the charter for their community they composed when aboard ship. They called it the Mayflower Compact after the ship, and one of whose first drafts had been written on the backside of a vocabulary list, two columns of words, one in Hebrew and their English translations. For these Puritans, during their weeks at sea, occupied themselves studying Hebrew for their love affair with the first two-thirds of their Bible, the Tanakh. I want to know what's really written there. And then after 16 years in their new settlement, when the first generation of babies had matured to the edge of adulthood, the community created a seminary to train the next generation of leaders who were their ministers. It eventually was called Harvard College and offered a BA degree, an ordination after 4 years, during which every year the budding men of the cloth studied Hebrew. And at the graduation ceremony, the best student, the valedictorian, gave the commencement address at Harvard in Biblical Hebrew. This tradition lasted for 150 years, until after the American Revolution, in the age of reason and turmoil and rejection of religion, when student protests ended the requirement for Hebrew study at Harvard. And other Ivy League schools, by the way, as well. They all started as seminaries. So the English have a schizophrenic relationship to the Jewish people. On the one hand, you have a mayor like Ken Livingstone. On the other hand, you have a mayor like Boris Johnson. The former is a lunatic anti-Semite. The other a philo-Semite. I think the vote last Thursday was heavily the result of recent TV coverage of armies of Muslims literally tramping into Europe, into Greece and the Balkans, coming from Turkey. Hundreds of thousands of largely young men who we now know have a tendency to gather in large crowds to molest women en masse. Once inside the EU and given all the welfare benefits the EU says they are entitled to, then in no time they would be invading England. And the English finally said, enough. The EU was created to mimic the American Republic, stretching from sea to sea without one tariff or customs duty imposed. But what Jean Monnet, the diplomatic economist who dreamed up the Union in the 1950s, did not foresee was the very differences in culture and society between Northern and Southern Europe, the language barriers, the tendency of bureaucracies to swell and accrue more and more authority and power. But most of all, here in Israel, nothing bad can come from the weakening of the EU, for it has proven itself to be a vehicle of age-old collective hostility to Jews that the Europeans have yet to outgrow completely. That French gathering 3 weeks ago of those 28 countries who almost atavistically are driven to tell Jews where they can and cannot live, to expel them from their homes, for them, the two-state solution has a pedigree, thousands of years old, well camouflaged in our generation, that they seem unaware of. Thank you. You're listening to www.deprogramprogram.com, broadcasting from the hills of Judea. I'm Shai Ben-Tekoa. So it was an illuminating coincidence last Thursday, this vote in the UK to leave the EU, as in the EU Parliament that very day, a lunatic Jew hater, Abbas, was the invited speaker, who was applauded during his speech, a speech in which he accused Israel of poisoning Arab wells. And then, of course, 2 days later, on Saturday, he retracted the accusation, and all accusations made against him, he said, and the Palestinian people, accusing them when they don't, of offending the Jewish religion. This is reminiscent of Watergate days, when every day a White House spokesman would issue a claim in the morning, be proven bogus before day's end, and so the next morning the White House would inform the press corps that yesterday's announcement was, quote, no longer operative. You lie on Monday, and on Tuesday you tell people, pay no attention to what I said yesterday. It was like Obama after Orlando pleading for his Muslim faith, and Americans must not attack Islam, because that is what makes America exceptional, he said. He runs for office sneering at American exceptionalism and then thinks nothing of using the term when it suits him. In this, Obama is very much a Muslim. He's a Muslim and constantly lying. Lying is a legitimate weapon in one's arsenal when fighting the good fight. You know, like the legendary British diversionary efforts before D-Day to mislead the Germans into thinking the invasion would come at Calais instead of Normandy. In war, one likes to deceive the enemy, so Obama believes he has had the right to deceive the American people about his health care scheme and to lie about what happened in Benghazi and to lie about the Iran deal, all in the name of victory and success for his vision of justice. Obama licenses himself, as does Hillary, to lie all the time, for their goals are just. And likewise Abbas and all the Arabs, like Nasser and King Hussein of Jordan in 1967, who conspired to blame the U.S. for humiliating defeat at the hands of the evil Jews. Yesterday on YNetNews.com, Bendol Yamini, a columnist of long standing, used to be, I think, the editorials editor at Yediot, may still be, or Maariv, he took on the Breaking the Silence group for lying. One of their leaders has joined the Arabs in accusations that the Jews have cut off the water to Palestinian homes. Never happened. Bendol Yamini, for those who don't know, used to be a fashionable lefty in the Israeli press, but the horror of the Oslo violence turned him around, if not completely. Today he still sees himself as a two-state solution man, but he has no time for the lies of the left. Their demonization, he says, as he calls it, of Israelis, which is always the hallmark of the anti-Jew in all generations. It is a hand that clouds one's vision and projects onto the screen in one's mind's eye scenes of Jews committing all kinds of cruelty and corruption that has no basis in truth. Unfortunately, the ruling class here of non-religious Israelis who grew up in functionally complete isolation among Jews only has trouble identifying this hostility to Israel among our immediate neighbors and their supporters overseas. They don't see those 28 diplomats in Paris 3 weeks ago and in Brussels yesterday, those applauding Abbas, as anti-Semites. Doesn't occur to them. For Israelis like these, anti-Semites are goose-stepping Nazis, concentration camps and ovens. Lacking all these things, there's no anti-Semitism here, in their thinking. But maybe last Thursday's performance in Brussels will work to change their minds a bit. Abbas was so clearly on cloud nine with his accusations, so characteristic of Jew haters in history, some Israelis may begin to wake up. Adam yachol liyot atzuv lifamim. Adam yachol liyot atzuv.
גם שאתה עצוב, צריך לזכור שאין לך... צריך לזכור שאין להפסיד את השמחה גם שאתה עצוב. צריך לזכור שאין להפסיד את השמחה גם שאתה עצוב. כן, 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 רבותיי, אנחנו צריכים יותר שמחה.
Last item, on Friday afternoon, just outside Kiryat Alba, next to Hebron, an Israeli-driven car had just pulled over to the side to pick up hitchhikers, which is the way many people get around in Yosh, when a car driven by an Arabian she-devil deliberately rammed into their car and injured two Israelis inside, these two men in their 50s. Thank God not too seriously. Those soldiers on the scene did the right thing by killing the Muslim she-devil. Well, I'm glad to see the ongoing trial against Elor Azariah did not stop them from doing what had to be done. Okay, that's it for this first night of the week, and I'll be back, God willing, on Tuesday. Until then, Laila Tov, Me'eretz Yisrael.